You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Welcome back to the Best Practice Show. My name is Kirk Barrett, where I'm your host. Take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over the country. And if you ever started your practice and you're thinking, man, I got to get control of this thing called the schedule, because you know how this works. Either you run the schedule, or the schedule runs you, and it runs you ragged. And they'll take you, patients, they don't mean to do this, but they'll take you to the black hole and leave you there if you don't control the schedule. And today we're going to be talking to my good friend, Dr. Pat Lillis, who's an amazing restorative dentist, and he's going to take us inside the mind of how we think about a better schedule. So you don't want to miss this. So do me a favor, grab a pen and hit the share button. You're going to love this. Now, I always like to do a few little things, formalities, introductions, whatever you want to call them, before we get started. Now, I get these texts from you guys all the time. You're like, hey, what's up? The podcast, where's the conference thing? You know, okay, listen. If you're listening to the podcast and you found us through the conference, here's what I'm just going to say. Do me a favor. I don't care if I know you're not watching the video, because we create all these videos. I look at the metrics later. You guys don't watch the videos, but you're downloading the audios like crazy. I'm totally cool with it. So over 145,000 audio downloads now. I love it. Love it. Just keep, here's what I do want you to do. See that little button that says subscribe? Just hit it. I don't care if you're listening to Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, whatever you're listening to the podcast with, do me a favor, just hit that button, because here's why. Every single week, I'm going to show up and I'm going to bring you a brand new expert, a friend of mine. You're going to see, I don't know that much. I always like to invite the experts on and ask them the good questions. And I don't want you to miss out. So keep showing up with us every single week. So hit the subscribe button. Second, some people ask, what the heck do you do? Okay. I love education. Our core business, I'll just answer the question, is we're coaches. We're a small coaching company, but here's what we do. If you're a practice owner and you're like, okay, listen, I'm not that thrilled that I'm writing off 35% and giving it to Delta Dental or whoever every year, and I want to start getting paid for what I do, give me a call. That's what we do. Number two, today we're going to be talking about the schedule. So if you're working like crazy days, crazy hours, and you don't like that anymore, don't do that. You're going to see Pat works 3.5 days a week. If you want to do that, you could call Pat or you could call me, because that's what we do. Number three, if you're just not getting along with your team, or your team doesn't like you, or people just aren't getting along, that's called a culture problem. You know this. The healthier your culture, the happier your practice. That's what we do. So I know you're so busy doing dentistry. So if you're struggling with any of those three things, people, time, money, give us a call. actdental.com. That's what we do. We are practice coaches, so you can create a better practice and a better life. Checking it out. Now, speaking of better practice, better life, you know, Pat, I don't even know, like, I text you in the middle of the day, you text back, like, you're so relaxed. I don't get it. Like, I'm even wondering if you're still a dentist, but I know you're a dentist because I see your stuff and it's fabulous. And today we're going to be talking about the schedule and how you think about it. Now, I've had you on here many times. A lot of people that are listening have heard you speak before, and you do a phenomenal job. But if somebody's listening, a young dentist, dental student for the first time, I always like our guests to share a little bit of who they are so we know who we're listening to. So who's Dr. Pat Lillis?
Well, thanks, Kirk, for having me on. As always, it's always a joy to be here. It's a lot of fun. We always have, this is like the best time that I have in all my weeks sometimes. So thanks for doing it. My name is Pat Lillis. I'm just a regular dentist in the middle of the country. I practice and live in Overland Park, Kansas, which is a suburb of Kansas City. I went to dental school at Creighton, and then I did a two-year AGD residency at UMKC, and this was the last place I landed. And so I was born and raised in Des Moines, Iowa, home of our mutual good friend, Dr. Bob Marges. Kirk, I have a small little comprehensive care practice in the middle of Overland Park. So that's who I am. I practice for now for going on 15 years. I have two kids. Brendan's a sophomore in high school and my daughter's in eighth grade. So I'm not only a dentist, but I'm also a parent. I spend about 20% of the time doing kind of what you do, lecturing and helping other dentists try to make their practices better, make their lives better, and just kind of share with what I've learned over the years through great mentors and friends and everybody, and just trying to give back to this really incredible profession that we get to do day in and day out.
Amen, brother. I totally agree. And I'm so grateful to have you on here. We're going to have a blast today. Now, I also want to talk about the why. Like, Pat, this is a big thing that you got to figure out in dentistry, because if you get the schedule right, you know, the best kept secret to almost every great successful entrepreneur or dentist is like time. We all have 24 hours. Some people use it differently than others. Tell me why this is so important before we get into the how.
Well, Kirk, I think as you know, the longer you practice, the more you appreciate this. But I think the most valuable commodity we have is time, really, essentially, because it's what we make things for other people, crowns, bridges, implants, dentistry, period. But it's the time where we really, that's what we centrally becomes probably the most important part of the practice. And it's probably the one thing I see that dentists give away the most or kind of waste away the most. And listen, I'm guilty of that myself. I mean, any dentist that comes on and tells you that we haven't been is lying. So time is incredibly important. And as the older you get, it becomes even more important.
Yeah. Now we're going to talk about your schedule. So currently you work 3.5 days a week, right?
I did. So I started off as four days a week. And about 2.5-3 years ago, I was talking again back to Bob Marges. He says, you know, you should go 3.5 days a week. I said, I can't do it. And he's like, what do you mean you can't do it? I said, I can't do it. I got to be there 4 days a week, you know, because I got to get all the cases in and, you know, blah, blah, blah. He's like, listen, you won't miss a beat if you go 3.5 days a week. I said, oh, I don't know. So I took the leap of faith about 2.5 years ago and I met with the team. I brought them all in. I said, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to leave Thursday at noon. And of course, everybody freaks out. Right. They say, well, you can't do it because we're not going to, you know, we're going to see our patients and this and that, whatever. And it's totally not true. So I work 3.5 days a week and I got to tell you, probably the best things I've ever done.
Wow. Now take us a little bit more into the perspective of, so you work on Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday. When do you start? When do you finish?
So this is something that kind of dovetailed just a second on this.
Please. Yeah.
Because this is probably the best part of dentistry, right? So I heard you speak about this. I don't even know how long ago this was, maybe like 14 years ago. And when you graduate from dental school, what hours did they tell you you have to work?
You don't. You can do whatever.
You can go wherever you want.
Especially.
Yeah. Right. And then how many days did you have to work?
Whatever you want.
So the beauty of this job is you get to kind of pick and choose what you want to do. So I work Monday through Thursday. I leave Thursday at noon and I see my first patient at 8 and I leave at 4 and I cut out lunch. So we don't take a lunch. I eat lunch, but I just kind of eat it in between people and this.
Right. Okay. So take us through this. And I'll just piggyback on this because Pat, I'm absolutely loving this. If you're a young dentist and you're listening to this, the earlier you get this in your career, the happier you are, because you probably went into dentistry for a specific reason. It was because you saw somebody while you were growing up. It was an uncle. It was your dad. It was a friend. You're like, that guy's a dentist or that woman's a dentist. Wow, they have a great life. They're always around. And the most challenging thing is that's your why. you went in it because you perceived you'd be able to help people and have a great life. And then when you wake up and you're like, wow, I'm not getting home till 7 p.m. and it's not matching up, that's when you get stressed. It's you're going against the core purpose of why you went into this in the first place. So I would just say this, you got to figure out the time algorithm as fast as possible, because Pat, people will come in the hours you work. Like, you don't understand. Wait. Let me play devil's advocate. But Pat, I'm so busy. Like, I got to see patients on Saturdays and Sundays and evenings. Like, what would you say to me when I tell you that?
I just disagree. I mean, it's really comes down to systems and organization. I mean, really, ultimately, at the end of the day, systems and organization, and really organizing your practice and kind of situating it to where you can schedule for success will allow you to, what you just said, you can leave at 4 o'clock. Like, you can literally walk out the door at 4 o'clock every single day, kind of like clockwork. So, you know, I saw this at a young age. My grandfather was a dentist, right? And so I grew up four houses from him. And every day on the nose at 5 o'clock, he'd be honking his horn, driving home from work. And my dad was an attorney and he didn't get home until like 9:30 and all this stuff. So, you know, people always say, how'd you get into dentistry? I said, well, I saw my grandpa. He's home every day at 5 o'clock. I thought that was like the coolest thing ever. So, but he did it because I learned early on how he scheduled. He was a master scheduler. Even 35, 40 years ago, he was doing this stuff. So it's been going on a long time. This is not a new concept.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, also too, I love the detail side of it. So do you have a huddle in the morning? Do you, like, what time do you get to the to work in before?
Yeah. Yeah, so I get to work at around 7:35, 7:40. I change into my scrubs, and then we have our huddle starts immediately at 7:45.
Okay.
And so the huddle's very organized. It's the same huddle we have every day that we've done for years. That's a conversation unto itself. And then we kind of break around 7:55 or so, and then we're ready to go right at 8 o'clock to see our first patient.
Okay, so cool. So take us into it. What's a typical day? Well, we're going to be talking mostly about Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. Take us inside the mind of how you think and what your practice schedule looks like.
Yeah, so this is a great question. So I learned this from a guy by the name of Dr. Greg Stump. Greg was a dentist in Chicago, Illinois. He ran a three-operatory fee-for-service practice. And what Greg taught me this early on is how to schedule. So here's what we do. We break our day up really into halves, and we kind of bisect it by lunch. So we have major and minor times in our schedule. So I've got to be honest with you, I'm not really, by the time the afternoon comes around, I get tired, right? I mean, I'm just not that sharp as I was in the morning. I'm a better morning person. Some people are different. Some people can go in the afternoon. Whatever it is, you know, that it fits you, that you can schedule however you want. But for me, what we do is we do all the major stuff in the morning. So we call it major and minor times. So majors would be all the major procedures. So crowns, bridges, implants, all on fours, dental reconstructions, you name it. That's what we do in the morning. And we kind of want to be pretty well finished up with all the major time by about 1 o'clock. So then 1 o'clock comes, and then we kind of switch over to consultations, new patient exams, crown and cementations, denture adjustments, denture deliveries, all the stuff that, you know, you can kind of do without concentrating all that hard. So that's how our days are broken up.
Yeah. And then this question always comes up. Tell me about the perio adjacent to those majors. Like, are you doing, I mean, are your hygienists, how do they schedule? And is it lined up in conjunction with yours?
Yeah. So this is important too. So we pre-block our hygiene for new patients. Now, granted, the texture of my practice is different than a lot of people's practices in that I have one hygienist. A lot of my patients are referred in either by another dentist or a specialist or a physician in the community or what have you. And but sometimes they just go back to whoever they're seeing. But what we schedule, we pre-block a certain number of hygiene visits per month for the random patient that just kind of wants to come in for hygiene. And then here's the other thing is that we pre-block all those major and minor times. So what I just mentioned, let's say that, and in the huddle, my staff will say our next major minor time, our next major block is on May 28th. And the next minor time is May 30th or something like that. So I know when I go in to see a patient or I'm seeing a patient or somebody calls, we know when that next block is. So I can either say, hey, you know, this is something we should probably, let's get you back in a week or two. And then they come up to the front desk and then they're not booked out a month or, you know, whatever. So it just, it reduces friction at the front desk. So we pre-block all of our times. And then the biggest thing is giving the staff verbal skills on how to handle it. Cause what you just said happens. We're like, well, you know, the Dr. Lewis does these procedures at 8 o'clock in the morning. I can't come in at 8. Okay. Well, he has a 10 o'clock. I can't, give me an afternoon. And they're like, well, he doesn't do these procedures in the afternoon. And it's amazing what I've seen over the years is that if you tell patients that they'll come to see you when you want to see them. So you just kind of got it. We just do it. We just tell people when to come and they come.
Right. I love that. Now, a big part of this is figuring out, everybody's got to figure out the algorithm for the new patient part of process. So tell us where that fits in. So when you're talking about new patients and then hygiene, are all of your new patients going through doctor? How many of those do you do in a month? How long are they? Or do you fight people when they want to go? Like somebody moves to Kansas City and they're like, I just want to get my teeth clean. Can you walk us through how you guys think about those things?
Yeah, the very first question they ask when they call my team, the very first question the team asks them is, who may we thank for referring you? And that kind of signals to where they're going to go. Now, granted, like I said, we don't get a ton of, I mean, we get hygiene patients for all the, what you just said, those are the most of the people we see. But the majority of patients are coming in from other doctors. So what we do is this, when people are coming in from another doctor or a friend or a dentist, and they have a very specific reason they're coming in, which is the majority of cases that we see, I simply just say, when the girls ask them, like, who made me thank for referring you, they'll say it. And then they just put them into a 30-minute slot for me. So we start off our new patients with a 30-minute slot. And what I typically do with the 30-minute slot is we meet them, we talk to them. I just listen to what their dental wants and needs are. I'm essentially doing my preclinical interview. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And so I'm essentially doing that. And what I'm doing is I'm trying to figure out, okay, is this going to be a good fit with us? And is it going to be a good fit for them? Because sometimes that doesn't happen. Sometimes it's just not a good fit for anybody. So they're interviewing me as much as I'm interviewing them. And so we do that right out of the gates. After that 30-minute block, then we will then bring them back for records. And again, I know when that records appointment is pre-blocked as well. So I know when that records appointment is. So we do a full, every patient gets a full records appointment, FMX, photographs, intraoral scan, and comprehensive perio and comprehensive exam. Every single adult patient gets that. So people, and then what we do is we then do a consultation, which is usually a week or two later. Now here's where people are like, this guy's nuts, right? There's no way people are going to come back that many times. And I don't know, Kirk, for 16 years, they just do. And what I found over the years is that, I mean, we're a comprehensive practice. So it takes a long time to really, you know, really diagnose and treatment plan these folks, but it takes a long time to build that trust. So that's just how we work kind of our new patients.
Now, remember, people have to come to you because of you, not because you're on their list, not because you're cheap, not because their plan has changed. Once they start coming to you, now there's a little bit more of this thing that's important. It's called trust. And they'll follow your lead when you say, look, I need to take a look at this. And then we'll sit down and look at it together. Now, I want to go back to your records appointment. Typically, how long is a records appointment for you with a patient? Is it 2 hours? Is it an hour and a half?
So it's 60 minutes.
Okay.
And a lot of times what we do, Kirk, is after usually on the first preclinical interview, I actually will do a comprehensive exam at that time. And then what we've done now, we used to bring them back for records and I did all the photographs and everything like that. And what I ended up doing is the Thursday afternoons so when I leave at Thursday noon, we have been putting our records appointment then on Thursday afternoon. So on that initial exam, I'll go ahead and do the comprehensive exam. So all my charting, my parachart, everything like that, get all that done on that first visit. And so that's kind of a wow appointment for a patient because they're like, oh, wait, I've never ever had this level of an exam. Like nobody's ever asked me these questions or nobody's ever told me any of these things. And then what I usually do is I'll have them come back and see the staff on Thursday afternoons for those records. So that's where the photographs are taken, the scans are taken, and the FMX. And then they're just, so what we found is that that's a better efficient use of time, because the staff is, I like to have my staff there anyways on Thursday afternoons, and it gives the staff something to do on a Thursday afternoon, and we're able to get them in quicker than trying to get back on my schedule for that. And I don't really, truthfully, I don't need to do those things. I mean, if you train your staff on how to take really good quality photographs, they'll do it. If you teach them how to take good scans, they can do it. And they're obviously going to take all your films anyway. So that's, the staff can do that.
Right. True or false? The more you do up front, the less you have to do later with patience.
100%. And here's the thing. I'm just not that good, Kirk. I can't sell. I mean, I can't do any of that stuff. I just give people the truth. You know, I mean, I tell them the truth and I'm honest, and I'm a slow burn. It takes me a while to really establish trust with the patient and to like get them kind of in the mindset of what we're doing.
Yeah. Are you using the whole referee comment from our good friend, Bob Marjois?
Every day.
Okay. If somebody's not listened to us describe the referee concept, which I absolutely love. What's the referee concept?
Yeah. So this referee is that every dentist should have this in their arsenal. And what we say is we say, hey, listen, Mrs. Jones, I'm just a referee. I call him as I see him, right? It's your money, your mouth, and your time. You do whatever you want. This tooth has a crack in it. If the crack goes a little bit further and gets in the nerve chamber, you may need a root canal. That's okay. You're not going to die because you had a root canal. If the crack goes beyond the nerve chamber and gets into the root structure and the whole tooth has a vertical root fracture and you end up losing the tooth and you need a dental implant, hey, listen, that's okay too. Listen, you're not going to die because you needed a dental implant. So I just call them as I see them, you know, and I got to tell you, Kirk, when we went to this years ago, the best thing we ever did, case acceptance went through the roof. When you just tell people the truth and you back off, that's it. I mean, that's it.
Didn't Bob Marley say this? The less that you need it, the more everybody else wants it. Something like that. You know,
yeah.
I think there's a certain point in every dentist's life where like the more that I don't need this treatment and I'm just telling the patients the truth, the more they end up wanting it. It's crazy. It's kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah. True story. So I had a case about a year ago, I got referred over and I no sooner hit the operatory than the patient says, I bet you're going to tell me I need $40,000+ worth of dentistry. I haven't even said hello yet. Right. So I looked at her and I said, I'm not going to tell you need anything done. And she looks at me and she says, what do you mean? I said, no, I said, listen, I'm just a referee. I call him as I see him. It's your money, your mouth, your time. You're not going to die because you didn't get dentistry done. Now your quality of life might kind of stink and you might have other issues down the road, but you know, you can technically survive if you don't get your teeth fixed. And she was just like, the whole conversation flipped, right? And she looked in her mouth and she needed a 28 tooth reconstruction. I mean, that's what she was getting for anyways. So she did need $47,000 of dentistry, but we don't push it. We just tell them the truth and that's it. We back away.
Yeah. So I have so many more questions. What about emergencies? What about things that happen now? So where do you put those? How do you call those audibles? And I'm even going to preface this by the more comprehensive you are, the less emergencies you have, true or false. And then how do you, because you're still going to get them, but not quite at the factor you used to. What do you do with those?
Yeah. 1 o'clock every day. So anybody that wants to call our office and see us for an emergency, we'll see it every day. Every day we've got a 1 o'clock pre-blocked emergency. So every day it's 30 minutes.
Okay.
So that's our triage time. So we can see 2 to 3 patients during that emergency hour if we need to. We'll bounce between the two rooms to do the service, the emergencies. And my emergencies are temp fell off, denture sore, pain in lower right side. And here's the thing, Kirk, I don't do any endo. So if I see a patient and I see him within 10 minutes and we take a radiograph and I think it's somewhat root canal, boom, they're out the door to the root canal guys, because they're the ones that are going to diagnose and treatment plan that tooth anyways. So we send all that endo out. I don't do any endo. So those are my emergencies. I don't get any other different things than that. That's usually typically what I usually get.
Right. Now there's two elephants in the room that we haven't talked about, because what you and I are talking about, I totally love it, but there's two X factors. Number one, the dentist has to be on time. So like you can come up with majors and minors, but let's be honest, if you're listening and you're constantly running over, you're killing it. But then you also have the X factor. The patient has to be on time too. They can't be showing up 30 minutes late and you go, oh, it's no problem. So how does that relate to your schedule?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So first of all, time. So when people are kind of transitioning to this type of scheduling, and when I lecture, I tell people this all the time. I say, first thing you should do for the first couple months before you kind of start going into this, time your procedure. So whatever procedures you do in your office, whether it be endo, perio, restorative, doesn't matter. So time them. See how long it's taking you to do them. So if you do a crown prep in an hour and a half, then that's your crown prep time. So that's, you know, that's an hour and a half of time. If you do an MO composite and it takes you, I don't know, 25, 30 minutes, then that's it. So, and then write all those times down and do it over a couple of months so that you get a good running average. And then that's how you pre-block your schedule so that you can always stay on time. And here's the other thing too. If you're not staying on time, then you either have to make a decision, okay, is that procedure really worth doing, right? So if molar endo, for example, if I can't start and stop at that exact time, then I tell the clinicians, I tell the other dentists, I say, listen, I don't know if that's a really profitable, efficient thing you should do anymore. Because if you can do this other procedure and you know exactly the start and stop time, like a single to two tooth crown preparation, and you know start and time on that, and you're monkeying around with this other thing like extractions or implant, I don't know, it doesn't matter, then maybe it's time to evaluate. Yeah, maybe you become more efficient in that and where you can start and stop at the right time, or maybe just think about not doing it at all anymore.
Right.
So, because time and predictability is the key to dentistry. It's the key. If you can start and stop and you can run on time and you know exactly where the end is going to be before you start, that's the key. Yeah. So that's number one. Number two, patients. This is, we preheat the patients before they leave. And the front desk will say, hey, Mrs. Jones, your appointment's at 8 o'clock on Monday morning. Just so you know, we run on time. So we expect you to be on time at a common courtesy for the other patients, which we reserve that time for them. Okay, so that's a verbal skill that we use at the front desk. If the patient, let's say it's an hour appointment and they're 15 to 20 minutes late, here's the thing, and this, it's hard to do, but we reschedule them. We reschedule them. And yes, it sucks taking the hit on production. It sucks eating 45 minutes to an hour of chair time. Oh yeah, I get it. But what we found over the years is that if we don't do that, it's just going to be a consistent pattern over and over and over again. So we feel like it's paying dividends down the road if we can just do that to our patients. We found it just ends up working in our favor downstream versus, you know, just it's so easy, right? But then what ends up happening is the whole schedule falls apart.
Yeah.
I mean, everything falls apart.
Yeah. Now, you and I have not talked about this, but some people are they're fanatics about the difference between 10-minute and 15-minute blocks. Does it matter to you or doesn't matter to you so much?
Well, so Kirk, that's a great question. And you got to understand, I only do about 5 or 6 things. So for me, the 15 to 20 to whatever blocks, that doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is that I say, when we transition it from, let's say, consultation to treatment, my team knows he's going to do this. It's going to take him X number of minutes to do it. So we do it more by procedure than blocks of time.
Okay.
So
another question on that is like, what's your philosophy around time in the hygiene chair? You know, like, how do you see that? Are those 1 hour blocks? Are they longer? Are they shorter? Like, how do you see that?
1 hour blocks are, you know, majority of my patients are all adults, right? I mean, we don't see many kids. I don't have hardly any kids in my practice. So we see adults on 60-minute hygiene blocks, 8 patients a day. We don't schedule any more than that. We don't do assisted hygiene. And if we do have children, they're 30-minute blocks usually. So we can put 2 of those in an hour, but that's pretty rare.
You mean you're not going to 30-minute blocks in hygiene to try to squeeze a whole bunch more?
No.
I mean, facetious, but I see people silliest things. They're like, I think I could go to 25 minutes. I'm like, you can't even have a conversation in 25 minutes, you know?
I told you, I'm not that good. So it takes me a lot longer to talk to patients. And, you know, I mean, half the fun in dentistry is relationships, right? I mean, relationships with other dentists and relationships with your patients. I mean, that's all the good stuff. So we like to take our time.
Okay, Pat, now we're talking clinical, but okay, now I got to, if I'm a dentist, I'm listening. Okay, what about all the other stuff like treatment planning, the administrative stuff? Like when are you doing all of that type of stuff? Are you doing it during the day, after? Like, how do you fit all that in?
I do all my admin during the day. So when you do, it's amazing when you pre-block your schedule out, you have pockets of air. I call them pockets of air during your day. And I use those pockets of air to do all of my treatment planning. And then I'll sit down with my treatment planning coordinator during that time, during those times. And I'll usually do the treatment plan. I'll get it done. And then I'll just find when she's available and we'll go over it together. But you got to understand, everything's systematized in our practice. So a lot of times, even when I do the treatment plan, I will just give it to the treatment plan coordinator and she can pick up on it. And she's been there for a long time. I mean, our treatment coordinators have been around a long, long, long time. But we give it to them and then they just pretty much build it into the paperwork that we give to the patient. And then it puts it in a folder and away we go.
That's great. That's great. Because taking that stuff home is painful.
Oh, I'm not taking it home.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about team meetings or anything like that? I mean, you're doing courses. You're either giving a course or taking a course, right? On a Friday-ish type of thing.
Yeah. So this team meetings has kind of bounced around during the calendar year. So we change it, but we typically try to have it the first week of every month. And it's in 1 hour and no longer. Okay. So remember, I'm a stickler on time, right? So no team meeting should last more than 60 minutes. So a lot of times what we'll do is we'll either pre-block it out on a Monday morning, because Monday is kind of like, you and I talked about this. I like the aerobic day, like I don't do a whole lot of big cases on a Monday. Monday for me is just kind of catching up from last week or whatever happened over the weekend or whatever. And then I start my stuff on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And Thursdays are my heavy lifting days. So sometimes we'll pre-block it at 8 o'clock on a Monday morning and it goes from 8 to 9 and then we'll cut it off and then we go see our patients. And then that's during lecture season. So that's usually typically during 9 to 10 months out of the year. And then during the summer, we actually will switch gears and go to Friday mornings, or since I'm leaving Thursdays at noon, we'll just do it from noon to one is a lot of times what we do. So we will change that monthly meeting from month to month, depending on the calendar year, depending on my lecture schedule.
Right. Now, Pat, if I'm listening, I'm going to do all these things, but then there's also this thing that comes at me and it starts with a C. It's called cancellations. Like, nobody's completely cancellation free, but I would imagine, how do you guys handle that? What's your mindset when people call and try to cancel?
Yeah. So what we do is this. So let's talk about on my end, on my column, not hygiene column, but let's say a patient calls in and tries to cancel on me about 72 hours out. What we typically will do is we'll give them a verbal warning, and the verbal warning is not like scolding them. It's just saying, okay, Mrs. Jones, I'm looking through the schedule and oh my gosh, I can't get you in on that block for another probably 8 to 10 weeks. And I know that Dr. Lewis is really concerned about this, right? And so, because we have motivators in my comprehensive notes. And so what ends up happening is they'll say, hey, are you sure you can't make it? And then they'll say, no, I just can't make it. I got a bad meeting. Okay, no problem. Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to put your chart right next to the computer, right? Because I don't want you to wait that long. And if we get any movement, I'll give you a call, right? And here's the thing. We could have an open block tomorrow, right? We could have opening times tomorrow. But the team knows that if we give them that open time tomorrow, they're just going to continue to behave the way they are. So what we do is that sometimes we'll wait an hour or two, right? And we'll call them back and be like, hey, guess what, Mrs. Jones? We just happen to have something that this doesn't happen very often, but we have 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. I know that, but do you want that? Because if you don't want it, you just got to grab it, kind of like a sense of urgency, and then they will grab it. So that's how we handle cancellations in a nice way. Hygiene. And it's no joke. Cause I only have one hygienist in my practice. And this is true. If you cancel on her, you probably can't get back in to see her for about 3 to 4 months. So we tell people this and you'd be surprised. They don't cancel. I mean, some do, but then they know that they're going to have to wait another 4 or 5 months to get in. So we don't reschedule them that way. We just call them. So that's how we handle it. I don't know if that's right, wrong, or indifferent, but it seems to really work over the years.
Yeah, that's great. Now, how far in advance? Now, a big part of schedule is making sure that it's, you know, going to happen the way you've pre-planned it. So your team, are you guys doing confirmations, like all that kind of stuff? Do you do reminders? How do you see that part of the process?
Yeah, we do all the same flavors everybody Dennis does. We use Smile Reminder, I think it's called, and that does all the various things. But on our big cases, let's say, I mean, for me, on all my reconstruction cases, that's a 4-hour appointment, right? So that's a little different animal. On the reconstructive cases, we will typically take a half deposit down on that appointment, and that's non-refundable. So that patient cannot cancel. So when they schedule that appointment, we tell them that, like, we take a deposit on the time and it's non-refundable. If you don't show up, that's fine, but we're going to keep the money and then you're going to reschedule. So let's say that you're doing, I don't know, pick a 6 crowns that morning, right? Or 12 crowns that morning. We're going to take, let's say it's 12 crowns. We're going to take 6 crowns as the deposit, and that's non-refundable. So I say this, and all the young dentists and some dentists out there will be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you do that. And blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, wait till it happens to you about 2 or 3 times. And you eat that time, plus you pay your staff and you pay the rent, you pay all stuff. You get over it pretty quickly, right? Because I remember this, somebody told me to do this years ago. Another dentist told me, I said, I'm not doing that, that can't. And then the older you get and it happens to you, you do it now. I do it 100%.
Oh yeah. When you get older, it gets easier. You know, when you're young, you'll screw up a lot, you know, and lose money. And then you go home and your spouse is mad and all that kind of stuff. And you'll tolerate. But the older you get, you're like, I shouldn't do that anymore. Now, let me just say this too. Patients are used to this. If you've ever rented a VRBO, you know there's rules. You don't get so much back if you cancel all that. So they're not so foreign to these cons.
No.
You know?
No. And the plastic surgeons do this. Like whatever plastic surgery you schedule in Kansas City, every plastic surgeon has a deposit on their time, non-refundable.
Wow.
Everybody does.
Now, again, so, I've got like 90 questions. We could make this a 7-hour podcast because I love to be.
I know.
What about perio blocks? How are you putting perio blocks into your schedule? How far do you put them out? How many? Do you release them under a certain amount of time? How do you think about that?
Yeah. So we have perio blocks every 6 weeks. So again, it's the texture of your practice. So every practice is different. I don't have a whole lot of perio patients. If it's a really big perio case, and let's say it's a large reconstructive perio case, I usually work with a periodontist to get them all stable because I want to share in the responsibility, right? Because if I'm going to save a tooth, I want somebody else to sign off on and say, yes, that tooth is savable. So we'll typically do that we'll work with a periodontist on, let's say that. But let's say it's just a run-of-the-mill normal case. Well, every 6 weeks, we'll have a perio block that's blocked out. And that's 2 hours long, okay? And let's say we're coming in and we're just not filling that, then we release that to a new patient block. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect.
Or we'll patch and plug those 2 hours with somebody that's on that on-call list that we put on there. So I don't think it's really good ever to, I mean, yes, you do need to kick patients out of your practice. Kirk, I couldn't tell you the last patient I kicked out of my practice. I just don't. I just put them on a list because I can plug them in somewhere if they need to be. And I found that to be pretty useful.
Yeah. The more relationship-based you are, the more clear rules, the less problems you have later on. Because, you know, you didn't say this, but you were alluding to this. If you're going to lose with a patient, you're going to lose way up front. That 30-minute thing that you do at the beginning, you already know this probably isn't the right patient for us in some cases. So before I go down the route of like records and doing all that work, we're going to shake hands and wish each other well, right?
Yeah. Sometimes they don't show up. That's the other thing too, is like, look at it's amazing to me, but you'll schedule a patient and they won't show up. So for us, it's like, it's 30 minutes. Yeah. That kind of stinks that they didn't show up for 30 minutes, but I didn't lose out an hour and a half. Because I've screwed up every way possible, right? I mean, I've done this every way. I used to schedule an hour and a half. I did that, you know, and then they didn't show up. And then I'm eating an hour and a half of chair time. I mean, so I think the older you get, the more stuff you learn. So anyways, but yeah. So that 30 minutes, we're not out a bunch of time if they don't show up, because that happens too.
Yeah, dude, this is worth its weight in gold. And so I want you to, let's say I'm a 32-year-old dentist, listen, Pat, and my schedule's crazy. And I'm like, what do you want to say to the 32-year-old dentist that's listening right now?
Here's my advice. And Kirk, you know this, like I lecture a lot and I just want to get back to dentistry. I think it's like one of the best professions. And I want to pass on what my mentors taught me, right? So I'm just the culmination of a lot of dentists and mentoring over the years. But I tell the young dentists, I say, listen, do whatever you're passionate about, right? So don't spend one more day in a practice that you're miserable at. So if you're just miserable day to day, go make it your way. And I tell students this all the time. So if a 32-year-old dentist that's looking, I say, listen, don't have anybody tell you can't do something, right? Because when I started my practice, everybody said, listen, you can't run a practice like this. I said, well, why can't I run a practice? Nobody's going to spend this much time and you're going to spend a bunch of time and people aren't going to accept treatment and you're not going to make any money and all this kind of garbage. And so I would just tell you, just do it the way you want to do it. Because yes, have there been patients over the years that didn't want what our practice offered? Absolutely. And where people walk out the door and didn't accept treatment? 100%. And you have to be okay with that. But if you have a burning desire to have a practice that you dreamt about in dental school, because everybody went to dental school, you know, really with big dreams and big aspirations. And then 5, 10, 15 years down the road, they're looking at themselves saying, "What? I don't know what I'm doing in this profession. I don't like it. I hate it. Life is too short. Don't do it." And you don't have to do whatever you can do, whatever you want to do in our profession, but you got to stick to it. And you got to have a lot of stomach lining, because people are going to tell you can't do it. There's going to be bumps in the road and you just got to persevere. So I would tell you, 32-year-old dentist, follow your dreams, do whatever you want to do in dentistry, because you can do it. Absolutely.
So weird you say that. My wife thinks I should see a therapist for this one, and I probably should. It's like, that's the number one thing you could ever say to me is like, just tell me I can't do something. And I'm like, even if I don't want to do it, I'm just going to do it because you told me I couldn't do it. So I want you guys to think like that. Like, you got to remember, this is America. You can do whatever you want. Like, there's no rules. I think what Pat's saying is brilliant. Like, just do it. So I know we've gone way over. Can I keep you for a couple more minutes, Pat?
Yeah, yeah. And one more thing. Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, you could say whatever you want, man.
One more thing. So when I first started my practice, I had the dental supply people came in there. So I work out of 3 operatories, Kirk. I only have 3. I work out of 1. My hygienist works out of 1. And then we have an overflow, right? That's it. That's all I've ever had in my entire career is 3 operatories. And people would come in and they'd look at my office and they'd say, how do you make any money in here? Like, I mean, you can't do any dentistry working out of 1 operatory, blah, 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 and all this stuff. And I couldn't tell you how many people said that to me. And I just said, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to run from operatory to operatory. It's just kind of not my thing. And I don't begrudge people that do that. It makes no difference. I said, this is not my DNA. I like to take my time. I like to finish preparations. I like to diagnose and treatment plan. I like to spend time talking to my patients. So I don't want to run from room to room. I just want a comprehensive dental practice. And then they say, well, you know, you need to take insurance. I said, I don't really think I need to take insurance, because like if I tell people what I'm doing and I'm explaining what I'm doing and I'm not gouging them, then either they're going to get on board or they're not going to get on board. And so they, believe it or not, the majority of the time is they will get on board. And what I did is I went to different specialists and I went to different dentists and I said, hey, this is what we're doing. I mean, here's all the cases I did during our residency program. I did this case the other day. Here's where it started, blah, blah, blah. And you'd be surprised over time when you develop a reputation. You know, Dr. Becker was talked about this on your show. I just listened to it like a week or two ago. And I was running and I was like, that's exactly right. If you just kind of hang around and you hang around other specialists and you hang around, and you say, hey, I'm just a sponge. Tell me what you can do. And you're really enthusiastic about what you're doing. People will send stuff to you. And every dentist is different. I have really good friends that send me cases that just say, listen, I love what you're doing. I don't want to do that, right? I don't want to spend that much time with a patient. I just want to do single to two-tooth dentistry all day long for my entire career. There's nothing wrong with that. And you deal with all that other junk, right? So It just works. Everybody can have their little niche in dentistry. So as a 32-year-old dentist, do what you want to do. I mean, if you want to do what I just explained, couple teeth, nothing wrong with that. If you want to do what I do, which is a comprehensive practice, looking at it from all angles, definitely do that too. So do whatever you want to do, but don't let anybody tell you you can't do things, because you can.
Extremely well said. So Pat, I know people are going to be listening to this. They want to reach out to you. How the heck do I find you? If you got a great study club, you haven't had Pat speak to your study club, you got to have Pat. How do I get a hold of you?
So you can reach me. Listen, you can call me on my cell phone. You can email me. You can call the office. We get this all the time. So my email is Dr. Lillis, so DrLillis, S as in Sam, at macmac.com. You can email me. You can go to our website at opdentaldesign.com, and you can check out our website, and you can call the office at 913-451-7330. And hell, I don't know, you can even call me on my cell phone, 913-231-9422. So happy to help any way I can.
That's awesome. Can I keep you for a couple more seconds?
You bet.
Anytime. You know what time it is. This is the segment where we kind of jump out of the whole dental thing and ask some questions just to find out a little bit more about our guests, because I love the relationship side. So I'm going to ask you a couple questions. I get the answer of two. So here's the first one. You didn't tell me what it was. Did you have a nickname growing up that no one would know about, and why, and what's the story behind it?
Yeah, one guy knows it and nobody else knows it, but my nickname was Putnik Scavuso.
What? Scavuso, why?
Putnik Scavuso. It was my neighbor. His name is Grant Clark. I'm going to put him on blast, right? So Grant Clark was my neighbor in Des Moines, Iowa. He's like a Listen, Grant had it figured out. He's a lot smarter than me, right? So he went into the investment world. He's made like a gazillion dollars. And he's the greatest guy ever, but he was my neighbor and he was a year ahead of me. And when we were little kids, for some reason, and he had an older brother. And his older brother, I was always over there. You know, as it was, Kirk, when we were kids. I mean, we were always on our bikes, like riding them all over the place. And in Iowa, we never locked our doors because you didn't need to. And we were over there as a little kid, and his older brother would be like, "Hey, Putnik, come over here. We're going to do this." And then Grant said, Putnik Scavuso. And Kirk, it stuck like white on rice. I was Putnik Scavuso probably right up until I was a senior in high school. And even then, and so even to this day, when I go back to Des Moines, I'll see Grant and his wife, Kayla, he'd be like, "Hey, Putnik, come on over here." So Putnik Scavuso was my.
Oh, I'm totally going to tear you up on that one in the future. We're going to get you a jersey that you're going to have to spell Scavuso correctly for me. And we'll figure out how to do that. Does Marges know this one?
Bob doesn't even know it. So this is all like super, super secretive.
I love that. I did have a nickname growing up. I had a bunch of them, but one of my buddies, one of my best friends, like in the post high school age, his name was Troy Comfrey, actually wrestled at Marquette, and we got in so much trouble together. We had so much fun. And now this is the days before cell phones. So I always had to call his house or whatever. And so his dad was like, so hated me. He's like, "Oh, you're screwing up my, like, oh, who is this kid?" And so I'd have to call his house and I'd have to have an alias just to get through. And so like, I'd always get through on the whole Jim Salvoni thing. So my name is Jim Salvoni for years. And so Jim Salvoni. And so his dad found out about it. He goes, "Oh, that's on it. Oh my God." So it's, I don't know. It was funny. And even now they still call me Jim Salvoni. So it's so funny. And I don't even know where I came from. I need to get through the gatekeeper.
So now in my contact list, Kirk, it's totally going to be changed.
Jim Salvoni.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. So here we go. Oh my gosh. I can't ask you that one. So what's the craziest thing someone said to you recently?
Anything somebody said to me recently, something came to mind that a patient asked me, but there is no way I can repeat it on this podcast.
Okay.
I can't. I mean, it was, I after all these years of dentistry, I think I've heard it all. This was crazy beyond all belief. If Josh Austin, if you're listening, if you want me to go on working interferences, I could probably say it over there. I can't probably say it here.
Yeah, this is a clean show. My 94-year-old grandmother watches this. So
no, I can't. This is so outrageous. I can't say it.
All right. Have you ever accidentally texted anyone? And how did it go?
I accidentally texted my wife one time, or accidentally texted my daughter one time, and I thought it was my wife.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've done the whole love you to my buddies. They're like, what? What is this? Oh, sorry about that. Just love you.
Yeah, yeah. I did it, but nothing provocative or anything like that. I just texted my daughter and she texted back and says, I think you're trying to text mom. I'm like, oh, sorry.
That's awesome. That is awesome. If you could sing a duet with anyone, who would it be? Are you a good singer? I don't even know.
Oh, I'm terrible.
Yeah.
But here's, if I could sing a duet, it'd be with my sister.
If we gave you a ticket to get on stage with anyone and magically your voice is amazing, like who would you want to share the stage with and just jam with?
That's an easy question. My sister Megan, she's amazing. Oh, my sister Megan can bring the house down. She was she was in choir in high school, all state choir. And her and I will definitely rip it up on karaoke after a couple glasses of wine.
Yeah. So I don't know. I have a bunch of them. Like I'm a big Jack Johnson fan. I love country music, like Eric Church. I don't think I could supplement anything Eric Church does though. Like I think I would just that would be subtraction by addition if you added me to that. But I think I grew up on Dave Matthews Ants Marching. I think if I could have the stage with him there and I could play the guitar and all the lights. I mean, I think I could totally like add another notch to that. But
yeah, I think you could too, Kirk. I've seen your pictures at concerts. I think you could definitely jam.
No, you've never heard me sing though. It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. So dude,
but that's all right.
You are the best. Thank you for being on, man. I am so grateful to have you on. Tell everybody back in Kansas City, I said hello. And we'll just hope that your Royals don't keep beating up on my Brewers here for the next couple of days. So
nah, just stick around for a while. The losing streak will happen. Don't worry.
Awesome. Well, stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for listening to Best Practices Show. If you enjoyed today, just do us a favor. Hit the share button, send us suggestions for things that you guys want to see. I'm going to have Pat back, and he's going to describe one of the more profitable components of single tooth digital dentistry on a future episode. So make sure you check that out. And until we see you guys next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. There you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.